From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
If you've ever found yourself in a fishing shop with a tape measure in hand, measuring a bait and tackle box to see if it'll fit inside a board game box, and we've all been there, then this is a show for you. What, you've never done that?
I have never done that, although I have done that in a sewing shop.
True confessions time on The Dice Men Cometh this week. Board games, card games with nerds, Trent and Mark. Oh, sorry, I should say Trent and former Claremont College Ducks. Mark.
High school, thank you.
Joining us tonight on Itch Radio 99.3 FM. I'm a little bit under the weather. I've got serious radio throat going on tonight. But hey, we'll push on through.
You should have an ice cold can of your favourite cola flavoured beverage. You'll take care of that one.
That's right.
Coming up tonight, another jam-packed show. We have an exciting interview with David Harding from Grail Games to talk about their fantastic Kickstarter project, 101, the binary card game. We're going to talk about what we've been playing. We're going to talk about some numbers on gaming retail industry. We're going to have a full Kickstarter review, all that and more.
And of course, something to kick our butt at the start of the show.
Yeah.
Out of LA, this is King with a little track called Lost One. Turn it up. Louder! Louder! LA rock is not dead, apparently. It's just come back with hipster beards.
Like us.
And flat caps and stuff. Yeah, that's a band called King. K-Y-N-G. I like that one. I like that album. Lost One, and it's the launching pad for another edition of The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark, have you been playing anything lately?
Trent, I have been playing a couple of games, funnily enough. The one I want to mention today, following on from my Marvel X-Men versus Avengers Dice Masters from last week.
Yeah, not a great game.
Yeah, I got it back to the table and my son was not that impressed.
Really?
Well, when you compared it to this game that I'm about to talk about, Marvel Legendary deck building game that I played with my son at a Hogs event.
Yeah, yeah.
He really liked that one, and the dice game really paled in comparison to it.
I'm really glad you're mentioning this because I actually don't have anything. Well, I haven't, because I half played this game of Legendary.
Yeah,
okay, so setting the scene. So we're there at a Hobart Game Society event and some new people rocked up and I'm playing Legendary and I'm like, okay, some new people have come in. I went and looked after those guys.
Mm,
we played Pandemic with them, which is all well and good. You finished Legendary in the meantime.
Yeah.
And then later that night I got to play something else, which, of course, we ran out of time to play. It was getting too late. So I've got two games that I've half
two
played.
Two half games.
Which I figure counts to one.
Fair enough. Well, so Legendary, it's a deck-building game. It has some elements of some of the different deck builders. So it has that element like Thunderstone where you have a choice of you can shop or you can attack. Or, in fact, in this game, you can do both. So you can, when I say shop, you can recruit. So you can recruit other heroes.
That sounds better than shopping.
Yeah, that's right. You can shop for heroes. You can recruit other heroes into your deck, which is obviously what you want to do, because you start out really with just a bunch of
bog-standard shield agents yeah,
and
yeah.
shield recruiters, and you're taking on the might of, in our case, the Red Skull and his minions. And hey, just a bunch of bog-standard shield agents is just not going to cut it. So you've got to recruit, you know, we had Captain America, we had Iron Man, we had Deadpool.
And you're getting all of these things out of the hero deck, which is made up of five different Marvel superheroes that you shuffle together. They've got multiple cards each with different powers, and you're just flipping one of those every turn.
Yeah, so you recruit into your deck, and then you draw your hand, and with that hand you are, as we said, you're recruiting more heroes, or you're attacking the villains. Because every turn, a card comes out of the villain deck as well, and it could be a bystander, which one of the villains grabs and holds onto, and you can rescue the bystanders.
Mm.
But the villains sort of basically march through the city, and after a certain number of turns, they run away. And if they have a bystander with them, they escape with the bystander, and bad things happen. At the same time, you've got the mastermind, and I think there were five different masterminds in the game, potentially four or five, and then the mastermind has a plot twist or a scheme twist or something. And every time the mastermind plot twist card comes up, the mastermind does something. Now, in our game, if 8 of those cards came out, basically we lost the game. And the first 4 were nothing happens. And then the last 4 were worse. So that was sort of the timing mechanic. As it was, the game with 4 of us took only about an hour, I think. Started off, we looked like we were really getting our butts kicked, and then all of a sudden we just started recruiting good people, and we did really well. Now, the artwork is really great.
It's better than the Dice Masters.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The only criticism of the base game is that there are 4 or 5 different cards for each hero, but they've got the same art on each of those 4 or 5 cards, whereas it's not like there's a shortage of art in the Marvel Universe. There are more than 5 pictures of Captain America, but apparently they have fixed that up in the later editions. Now, there is an expansion, Dark City, which just expands the base game. There's a new base game, Villains, which you basically play the opposite side. So you play the villains, and the heroes come marching out and you defeat them. So it exposes you to both sides of the spectrum. I just have noticed on Board Game Geek that, surprise, surprise, there is a Guardians of the Galaxy expansion coming out.
Who would have thunk?
As well as a Fantastic Four expansion. So,
I'm really impressed with the Marvel Legendary system. When you compare this to the other superhero game that I was getting into a little way back, Sentinels of the Multiverse, I think this does more or less the same thing, but much better.
Yeah.
Much better.
Look, I actually was about to duck into my friendly local game store and purchase this game. Luckily, they were out of stock. That's how impressed I was with it. And as I said, you know, my son really, really liked it, whereas the Dice Masters, he was really meh. Now, you could say that the theme is pasted on because, you know, Captain America's power on some of the cards was, for each different colour of card you have, you get to get an extra recruiting point. I mean, is that thematic about Cap? But the game looks great. It plays really easy. It's great to introduce new players to. It introduces people to the theme of a deck builder.
It also introduces people to the Legendary game system, which is now going to be deployed with, or at least one new theme, and that is based on the Alien movies.
Oh, yeah, that
right.
sounds so good.
So all 4 of those movies, and I guess maybe Prometheus a little later on down the track and another expansion, are coming out in the... I think the acronym is ALERT, Aliens Legendary Encounters.
Legendary Encounters, an alien deck building game.
Thank you. Yeah, which, look, those first 2 Alien movies in particular, I'm all about that, I'm definitely going to be grabbing that one now that I've had a try of this Legendary game system. Yeah.
Get your hands away from her, you bitch. Or
game over,
that.
Man. Yeah. Okay, what have I been playing
what
lately?
What have you been half playing?
I half played a game of Last Will.
Yes.
I know you've played
this. Yes, I have. I really like it.
This is essentially Brewster's Millions, the game.
Yeah, that's
right. If you remember the Richard Pryor movie where he had to spend a certain amount of money in order to get the full inheritance. So it's that kind of theme. You've got to spend as much money as you can. It's got this really daft 1800s twee theme with fabulous artwork and components. But it's all very, very silly. You have to do things like buy and sell property for the most ridiculous prices that you possibly can and indulge every kind of over-the-top expensive fetish and dinner. Do things like take your horse to the theatre.
Take your dog on a dinner cruise.
That kind of stuff.
Actually, that's something that you would probably do.
2 to 5 players. You play this in about an hour. It's a complicated system to try and explain. You've got to make a plan for the round, and you're sort of bidding for a turn order. But with the turn order comes a certain amount of cards that you're allowed to have, a certain amount of workers that you place. So it's this sort of... it's a mix of card drafting and worker placement and
action selection.
And some economics in it as well as you manipulate the stock market. The big thing about Last Will is that the actions themselves are really scarce. There's obviously no problem with money.
Yeah.
Aside from trying to get rid of it fast enough, but it's the actions enabling you to do that.
That's right. In most cases, you're only getting 1 or 2 actions in a turn.
So this mix of drafting, worker placement, card combos, economic management, it makes it unlike anything else I've ever really played. And look, I did find the iconography on it a little bit tricky. little bit going on to get your head around for a learning game, but it's not that difficult. You know, within sort of 20 minutes, we're up and running.
Yeah.
Just a little bit tricky with those symbols. Last will, I really want to get back to this and actually play a full game of it because, like I say, it's just... You know, it's rare that you actually play a game that doesn't remind you of anything else.
Yeah, it is quite unique.
That's out there.
You know there's an expansion where you have to get a job and then lose it. Like, get sacked as well. And interestingly enough, it was... Last Will.
Don't let me laugh tonight, man. I'm still sick.
Well, it is Last Will that friends of the show... Was it Mazza? And Medusa in Love produced those cards.
Of course.
Where he proposed marriage during a game of Last Will.
Yeah, so for that and this, the fact that it's a great game, I was very, very glad to get Last Will to the table, and it's one I would heartily recommend that you have a try of.
Yes.
Okay, coming up on the show, we're going to be talking... I've got some numbers on Gen Con. Actually, can I give you one of the numbers on Gen Con?
Yeah, give us a number. Right
now? Gen Con, of course, the big American gaming convention that wrapped up last week in the States. Official attendance figures. It's a new record. 56,614 nerds all in one spot. And that is Indianapolis for Gen Con for what bills itself as the best 4 days of gaming. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And I got some other numbers on the gaming industry as well, so that's quite interesting. And up next... Our interview with David Harding, Australian gaming designer, and that's coming up on the Dice Man Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Muro on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark here for the Dice Man Cometh. We'll be talking Kickstarter in just a few minutes, but right now we'd like to talk about one Kickstarter in particular from an Australian designer, David Harding, and I'll let Mark tell you all about it.
So David Harding from Grail Games, we're very excited to have you on board tonight, the Dice Man Cometh, talking about your successful Kickstarter project, 101. But before we get to that... Our listeners always like to know, what have you been playing lately? What's been getting to your table?
My wife actually has just recently gotten into gaming a bit, which has been really exciting for me.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So what, just last night we played Castles of Burgundy. I got her to play a new prototype of mine.
Maybe we'll come back to that in a little while. I do want to hear about your next project, because obviously this project you've got at the moment, 101, it's not your... First successful game, is it?
Last year with my brother's publishing company, Adventureland Games, we successfully had a Kickstarter for my first published design, which was Elevenses, which is just hitting stores now or in the next week or two.
This has an interesting theme.
Elevenses is all about serving the best possible morning tea.
Yeah, and your company name is Grail Games. And I saw on your website that you're focusing on family games. And obviously morning tea is a very family-friendly theme.
All my games, I think, seem to come out with strange and original themes, which has been interesting. So Elevenses was the first game, which is for 2 to 4 players. And then I designed Elevenses for 1, which is just a solitaire game.
Okay, great. So it's two versions of the same game. Fantastic.
So Elevenses was the one on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And Elevenses for 1 is currently just print and play. So it's for free. And I should probably plug that. And anyone can go download it and give it a go.
What everyone wants to know about, of course, though, is 101, the binary card game. Now, it's 20 days, about 20 days as we're recording this into a 30-day Kickstarter campaign. And so far, it's been incredibly successful. You're already up to almost $8,000, and obviously your original goal was only $5,000. So tell us about the process of getting the game to Kickstarter and then how it's been going.
Well, 101's a design that's been around for a little while for me. Last year, it was on thegamecrafter.com, which is a website that people use often. They put their games up there and people can pay on demand and it's printed one-off just for them.
Yes.
And now that once I decided to take the plunge and put it on Kickstarter, it was a good one I felt to start with, a good design to start with, even though it was my own, which makes me look a bit big-headed. But because it was such a small game, it would be easier and cheaper to produce.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, one of the things we mentioned about on our previous show when we mentioned your game is the fantastic thing we'd love to see more Kickstarters do it, is free shipping anywhere in the world. That's obviously very exciting.
It's something I felt I really had to do if 101 was to get any traction outside of Australia. It's just the way it is that we live so far away from the big game manufacturers and most of the gamers in the world. For a game to be successful, it needs to reach people all over the world. And unfortunately, to get a game published, manufactured, and then shipped into from Australia all over the place is just, that's the hard part of Kickstarter for us, unfortunately.
KickTracker tells me that although you've raised almost 8,000 now, you're heading towards around about 12,000. Looks like your stretch goal was run out about 10, so you must have some more plans.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple more planned, or three or four more planned. So far, most of the stretch goals have been to add more cards, sort of mini expansions to the game that you can put in and out of the game. Once you get a bit more money behind you, thanks to everyone's support, the quality of the components will get improved. It's not as exciting for gamers, perhaps, but it is for the publisher.
What we probably should get you to do is give us a very quick rundown of what the game is and how it plays.
101 is just for two players. It's a very fast, I'd say on average about 10 minutes per game, but it's very deep and tactical. What it is it's set in the 1980s world of computing. One player is zero, one player is one, the binary numbers, of course, yes. And they play cards to a program. And basically the players are trying to use their cards to gain control of five rows of the program, which at the end of the game will score them points depending on which lines they control. But the cool thing is that the cards don't just have zeros and ones on them. Most of them also have commands that will affect the cards already in play. Like some cards say delete, and if you put them next to a card, that card will be deleted from the program and so on.
Clearly this is going to, well, it's already been funded. Clearly it's going to be produced. So your thoughts must be turning to your next project?
Yeah, well, this was actually not intended to be our Kickstarter campaign. Grail Games was designed to publish other people's designs, but I decided to go with 101 because it was absolutely fantastic, but also because it was ready to go and it would be a great practice, I suppose, for the company to make sure that we can get something produced to high quality and on time.
And at least I guess you also knew the designer wasn't too much of a prima donna.
Yeah, he can be troublesome at times.
So you did talk about that you had another game that you're thinking about putting on Kickstarter, and then this one went first. Are you able to tease us with some details of this mythical other game?
Well, there's a few games on the horizon, actually. We've got a few actually well-known designers lined up to help us to put out some games. That's in the near future.
Can you name drop any of them at all?
I can't give you that much. But once it's out, your light bulb will flick on.
Okay.
Remember this day.
I will.
I personally have a couple of games that should be out relatively soon. The only thing holding them up is to get the artwork done. One of them is called Hunter Gatherer, which is a card game where the players sort of take on the role of a Stone Age tribe. Another game, the title is in flux at the moment.
I think that one's already taken, Flux.
It's only got 17 cards and a few wooden pieces. I guess think love letter size.
It seems to be a very strong trend at the moment, if you would call it the mini game or the micro game. Are you finding that?
Look, I've been a follower of the so-called micro game trend for a lot longer than the trend existed. It's actually, sorry to sound hoity-toity, I prefer to call it Japanese style of game design. In Japan, it's not just love letter that many people may have heard of lately. This is the way games are designed over there and have been for many, many years. There's a few reasons why. I really encourage people to get on the internet and see if they can track down some of these obscure Japanese games. They are tiny, but they pack a punch. I'll just plug one. I played one the other night called this is the title, right?
Yes.
A Fake Artist Goes to New York. And it's a fantastic party game where players are drawing the same picture, but one of these artists doesn't know what they're supposed to be drawing. And the other players have to figure out who the fake artist is. And it's hilarious. It's absolutely fantastic. So track that down and any others that you can find.
Now, I do remember a game that I spoke about, and it was a Japanese... I'm trying to find it as I'm looking. A game where an enclosed, short young lady, a perfect class representative, a slightly elder classy maid, a normal high school girl with the aura of a hamster, among others, try to win an unlucky girl-faced butler with a debt.
You know, it is true that some of these Japanese games take longer to read the title than to play. I haven't played it, but it's on my wish list. It's not just Japan. Have you ever played the game For Sale?
Yes, I do.
Which is a small, very small game, a few cards, by Rainer Knizia, who's German, I think. That just blew me away because it was so small, so simple, yet I could play it over and over and over again and have a great time each time. I certainly think that simple, small games with simple rule sets that have depth are just so elegant.
Have you played No Thanks?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, to me, that fits in that same school where it's, you know, it's 30-odd cards and some plastic chips. You can sit down and play it with almost anyone, but it does have that sort of light bulb moment where people go, oh, that's what's going on. And then they want to play it again, and then they start to think about it a lot more.
Perfect example.
Good. The name of your company, Grail Games, are you looking for the holy grail of game designs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, 101, we found it already. But there'll be more grails. I mean, the name came from many gamers. If there's a game that's been long out of print, they'll say, oh, I want that. That's my grail game.
Yes.
I'd like to think some of the games we put out will become some people's grail games.
I do note also on your website that you are negotiating rights to a number of reprints.
Mm.
Anything that you can tease us with there that people might know of?
I can't say. I'm just not allowed to say.
Oh, okay. Well, you know who you've got to give the exclusive to when you can say more, okay?
Yes, Tom Vass. I mean, Dice Men Cometh.
David, thanks so much for talking to us tonight on the Dice Men Cometh. Any final words you want to give to our listeners?
Sure. Check out 101 on Kickstarter. We'd love your support. Thanks to everyone who's already supported us. As we've said, stay tuned to our future releases. If you want to check out grail-games.com for all the news, we're also on Twitter and Facebook.
Fantastic. David Harding, thank you so much for talking with us on the Dice Men Cometh.
Thanks, Mark. It's been fun.
And that was Mark talking with Dave Harding from Grail Games, the Kickstarter for 101. At the time of broadcast, 166% funded. So it's going ahead. He's raised over $8,000 with just 8 days to go. So get on that one.
Yeah, it's a really good one to get on, supporting a great Australian game company. And look, I will admit, David did come on later and let me know, or remind me that, of course, Rainer Knizia isn't the designer of For Sale. It is Stefan Dora. Sorry about that one, Stefan.
Isn't it sweet that he came back and to correct his mistake? He's like, oh no, my geek credibility.
Yeah, that's
right. I've just shot myself with the... No, your secret's safe with us, mate.
Fantastic, Dave. Hey, we're going to be back in a minute with some more numbers about the game industry in Gen Con and also Kickstarter. But here's some music. The Dice Man Cometh, 99.3 FM on Edge Radio. That was Everybody's Waiting by The Middle Names, another great Tassie band. Before that, Passing Out the Pieces by Mac DeMarco. Now, Trent, you've been doing a bit of research.
Yes.
Half-assed?
Well, I'm just copying and pasting stuff off the internet, really, so I suppose half-assed is a fairly accurate description.
Hey, before you get into it, can I just ask you, have you played many seven-player games of Seven Wonders? And finished in the top six, yeah.
Okay, moving on. We've spent much of the last show or two talking about the Gen Con event in the States, which has just finished, and it's going to take weeks to digest all of the games that were there, and we listed some of the more interesting ones in the show last week. 56,000-plus people attending, 360 companies in attendance, exhibition space in Indianapolis, 14% bigger than last year, and it's sold out in record time. And in case you're worried that all of this stuff is just really self-indulgent, those nerds also managed to raise over $40,000 for a local charity there as well, which supports people in low-income situations who can't afford to eat. So doing some good work there at Gen Con. And I was looking at all the wash-up around this, and I was thinking, okay, look, this is fantastic. Mm. We've actually got some data on how big this hobby of ours is. Is there any more around? And lo and behold, I've actually been able to locate some real numbers.
Some facts.
Around this. Yeah, so an analysis of the hobby game market that was done in 2013 puts an overall value on the hobby gaming industry of $700 million.
Oh!
I thought it might be interesting to compare that, though,
yes,
to video games.
Yes.
The video gaming industry, $93 billion in the same year. So we are a complete minnow, just a drop in the ocean. And I mean, Hollywood is just something else, way over and above. So we are just small fry. But the overall trend that comes out of any sort of cursory reading of your events like Gen Con and Spiel, which is coming up in October in Germany as well, is that it's a growing market, it's a growing industry, and there's just constant growth going on. $700 million, when you break it down into the various sections of the market, you've got your collectible card games, which are the single biggest section. That's $450 million worth of value right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at things like Pokemon, My Little Pony, Marvel Dice Masters, Magic the Gathering. So that's the single biggest section. Looking further ahead, miniatures are the next biggest sort of catalogue, $125 million mm-hmm. in 2013. That's including X-Wing and Star Trek, and you've got D&D Attack Wing coming up in there as well. So that's going to continue to have some hits in that section.
So is that including things like Warhammer 40K? And
exactly,
that?
Exactly, yep.
So that also would be a huge portion of that section.
Board games, our personal poison, $75 million right there in 2013 mm. and continuing to grow. Card and dice games, $35 million. Mm. That's Adventure Time. Boss Monster has been another really, really big one.
Okay.
A game that neither of us have played. And it's apparently not that great anyway. And then all the way down the bottom of the ranking, out of your 700 mil, worth $15 million, role-playing games.
Mm. Really, that's way down, isn't it?
It
I
is.
Would have thought.
But the thing about more. Well, the thing about that in 2013 is that Dungeons and Dragons was not a big seller last year because, of course, everyone's getting ready for the relaunch of D&D next for 2014. So we can expect that to change. And all the reports from Wizards of the Coast are that the sales of the new D&D are huge, and of course, because it's a brand that has legacy and recognition much more than Pathfinder or Numenera or Fate or any other kind of system. People know what D&D is, and if they're going to start doing a role-playing game, their dads are going to walk into the shop and say, hey, have you got D&D?
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
yeah.
And they're going to see it's shiny and new. But getting back to the idea of growth, one of the single biggest board gaming publishers in the world, Fantasy Flight Games, made a presentation at Gen Con this year.
Their in-flight report, they call it.
In which that they've reported 25% growth annually since the year 2000.
Wow.
That means they're growing faster than the Chinese economy.
No, except that most of their stuff comes out of the Chinese economy.
That's
maybe
true.
They're single-handedly supporting the Chinese economy.
They're a large part of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And they're only going to continue to grow because, of course, they've got the Star Wars license
now. Yeah,
that's
right.
And, I mean, the announcement of this new Star Wars Descent-style game, what's it called again?
Imperial Assault.
Yeah, alone. I mean, the sales of that is going to be massive.
Yeah, and, of course, they released the third faction for X-Wing, the scum and villainy faction, which is the bounty hunters and the pirates and all that sort of stuff. So now that can actually be a three-player game.
And the other big trend to come out of Gen Con this year, aside from just the sheer size of it and continued growth, is the continuing combination of the physical with the digital and using apps on your iPad and iPhone and what have you and actually combining those with the games. And again, Fantasy Flight Games is...
That's right, with their new XCOM game. We talked about that last week, how they're going to have an app as part of the game.
But I'm not going to be happy until, we get more of that Microsoft Surface type stuff, those whole tables like a whole table is an iPad that you can actually play a game on.
Yeah, wow, that's going to be exciting.
So with all these games, I mentioned the word glut last week, and I just kind of I filed that away, and I wanted to follow up on it because looking at the market in 2013, doing a quick count of the games that were released last year on Board Game Geek, 3,678 games released. Now, if you divide that by, actually, I'm looking at this, I've realised I've got my sums all completely wrong.
Maths.
If you divide that by your 700 million, I think that works out to being about just over 20 grand each, which is not enough to live on.
No.
If you're planning on being a game designer. But demand is growing. The pie is getting higher, to quote George Bush. but, you know, board games, I mean, it's a luxury product, isn't it? And it's going to be the first thing to go out the window. People are going to stop buying these things if there is some kind of economic crisis or some kind of, you know, an end to peace.
Mm.
So if you don't think that the situation in the Ukraine affects you and your board gaming.
It does. Yes. And look, I do remember Scott Nicholson, the Board Games with Scott Man, talking about his fabulous game, Tulip Mania, that simulated bubble markets, that he made a grand total of 50 cents per copy of that game that sold. I think it sold for about $40 a copy. So of that, as a designer, purely original design or 100% original design, he made 50 cents a copy.
Mm. So listen, if anybody has any questions coming out of that half-assed barrage of numbers there or any corrections or anything to add to it, please hit us up on the Facebook and start the discussion.
Mm. Now, Trent, speaking of losing, which of course we always are when we're talking to you, you look good tonight. The lovely Kate Miller-Heidke, she's losing her shit there, pardon my French, on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with an Iceman Cometh, and I'm very excited to say that I am going to see Kate Miller-Heidke in Launceston in a week and a half, live with her new album launch tour, O Vertigo. It's a fabulous album. I did see her in Hobart not that long ago, and she's brilliant live.
So if you're heading up to Launceston next weekend, does that mean we're not going to see you for the debut of the Hobart Game Society at Mona?
Correct. I'll be driving back, actually, from Launceston whilst you're at Mona.
This is big news, and it just got announced today, and it kind of took me by surprise. Mona, of course, being the Museum of
Old and New Art,
Based here in Hobart. If you're not familiar with it, it's
the world-renowned Museum of Old and New Art.
And it's basically just an art gallery that kind of turns everything you think about art upside down. It's been a huge hit for Tasmania, a great boost to our economy and our arts and culture scene down here. And also, David Walsh, the guy that runs it, is one of the closest things in real life that we have to a James Bond movie villain. And the Hobart Game Society has been able to go in there with a bit of space, because they've got this community centre space.
Yeah, which was a
called
gallery.
Kimona?
Kimona, yeah. It was a gallery. So, I mean, look, Mona, they've got their finger in everything. Now they've got their finger in a hog.
So
actually, he has had hogs there which have had tattoos on them when he had the Vim Delvoir Tattooed Man exhibition.
Yeah, so we're going to be there playing board games, maybe getting tattooed. Hey, we'll see if the mood hits us on Sunday the 31st of August between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Come on down and say hi. Roll some dice with us.
Now.
Oh, no.
Now I've got my Kickstarter round up, but I'm not going to play some rousing music. Just got a little bit of a backing track there. How about that?
Do you get up in the morning and go, now I'm going to put on breakfast. I need some breakfast music.
I just love music. What can I say? Anyway, look, let's just have that in the background as I talk about Kickstarter. Yeah, look, we've already been talking about 101, the binary card game. As we said, only 8 days to go, and it's funding like mad. Get on that one. A couple of other Aussie Kickstarters. Goblin Quest, the RPG of fatal ineptitude. It's been described as itchy and scratchy, crossed with the animals from Farthing Wood. It's already up to 200% funding. It's still got 26 days to go, so it's actually it's going absolutely berserk. And another Aussie game designer has got Hedron, the polyhedral space dice battle.
What?
Which is
slow down. What poly? What?
Yeah, it's dice. Basically, you've got different shaped dice, and you've got them on hexes, and the dice are the ships, and you're fighting, and it's 150% funded,
although the funding level was only $1,000, so but it's definitely going to be produced. It's very interesting, so have a look at that. That's three great Aussie games. Other things that are happening, there is a steampunk, and speaking of music, a steampunk and Cthulhu game soundtrack Kickstarter, which is over 200% funded. For $30, you basically get 4 hours of, much like this actually, while we're listening to steampunk and Cthulhu game soundtracks for your gaming sessions.
I've seen these soundtracks on Kickstarter before, and I have to say, in an era where you can illegally download anything if you're predisposed towards crime at the touch of a button, or open up a Spotify account for just a couple of bucks and get unlimited music or whatever you want.
Spotify now you can even get for free on your phone. You just can only skip so many times. And they have all sorts of mixes there.
There's any kind of movie soundtrack available on that. But exactly. Hey, who are we to pollack someone else's Kickstarter?
Anyway, Queen Games, every time they come up on Kickstarter, we say, what the? They're doing it again.
Another Kickstarter for a game that was going to be published anyway.
That's right. Yep. Dirk Henn, the designer of Alhambra, has got a new game called Neptune without the E on the end. It's $45 for the game. Unfortunately, it's $35 shipping to Australia, but it's already 250% funded. There's still another 10 days to go. It looks quite interesting. Asking for Troubles, we mentioned that earlier. It's still got another 10 days to go, and it's about 95% funded, so it's very close to getting produced.
Was that the one that was a play on Tribbles?
Yeah. Okay. Same sort of thing. I did also mention Tavern Brawl, the game.
Oh, yeah.
They were trying to raise $2,000. It did get funded. They raised over $37,000 on that game. A couple more interesting Kickstarters, not related to games, but here's an Australian one. The Stupendous Splendiferous Buttercup. It's a butter knife that has these little ridges, and as you scrape your butter, it sort of twirls, but it has the effect of softening your hardened butter, okay? Now...
Actually, that sounds really cool.
I know. Well, they did plan to raise $38,000, and they've raised $136,000for a butter knife in Sydney.
Every gamer likes toast.
All right. Another Australian Kickstarter is Magnetic Cable Organisers out of Melbourne. Again, they were trying to raise something like $1,500. They've raised $42,000 for these magnetic computer cable organisers. A couple more interesting ones. The Noki, N-O-K-E, or Noki, is a Bluetooth-activated padlock.
Wow. All right.
And they have, I can't remember, read my own writing, they were raising $100,000. They've actually raised $134,000 for Bluetooth padlocks. And... this one's going to blow you away. From London, the hover bike.
No way!
Okay, so what they've got these guys is they've got
these things don't exist.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. So, but what they've got is they've created these hover bike drones, which are 1/3 scale, right?
That can carry
working
a person.
Models. No, no, no.
Right.
They can't. But as proof of concept. And they've gone to market and said, hey, you can buy these drones because we're going to put this money into producing a real hover bike. They've raised £41,000 for these hover bikes. Check it out, the hover bike on Kickstarter. It's already 200% funded and it's still got another 26 days to go. So it's 200% funded. It's only been running for like 4 or 5 days. It's an amazing video. Now, I want to have a rant about Kickstarter. What is it about... playing cards. How many frickin' different artwork playing cards do we have to have? Every time I look up games on Kickstarter, there are thousands, they are literally thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of bicycle playing cards with different backs. Okay? Hang on. I've got to turn that off because I'm sick of frickin' playing cards!
Is it wrong that I'm just picturing you drenched... you know, naked and wet climbing up a waterfall like Jeremy Irons in The Mission.
Anyway, please that's continue. Kickstarter. No. That's my Kickstarter roundup. That's all I've got. That's all you're getting tonight.
Hover bikes.
Yeah. It's check it out. It's freaking amazing.
Are they actually going to work?
Oh, yeah. It's basically... like a helicopter blade, but there's four of them, two at the front, two at the back, sort of half overlapping with these bits around the edge, which make sure you don't cut people's legs off.
sound dangerous at all.
Look, in the video, this drone flies up and delivers a drink to a man. Like, that's how stable they are. A drink in a glass, and he just takes it off. So this is the one-third size drone that they've produced and that you can buy for only about £1,000 or something, you know, through this Kickstarter. But they've got, this is their proof of concept for the actual, yeah, basically hovering motorbike.
It's all amazing. Well and good until you decapitate someone's pet or child. And then the Civil Aviation Safety Authority are going to get involved.
So, Trent.
That brings us to the end of another show.
It does, again.
Diceman Cometh, hit us up on Facebook and also Twitter at Diceman Cometh. Don't forget, if somebody says something stupid in your gaming group, tweet it and use the hashtag DiceMenQuotes, because we're always interested in those stupid quotes that crack everybody up in the middle of the night.
And no doubt you'll be getting some from us later tonight, because we're off for another gaming session. But firstly, or finally I should say, we're going to answer the question of what happened to Elvis. He's here in Hobart, or somewhere in Tasmania, as frontman for the Elvis Christ Band. He's moving at the speed of light. We're about to play a song from him. But thank you very much for joining us on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men Cometh. See you next week.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.